Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Day, and with me is my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, we finally, at least temporarily, made it on the air.
We did. Technology was not our friend leading up to this.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It's been a little bit of a sketchy day in general with the technology. Maybe it's the weather. I do not know.
Can never trust it. No. Skynet is going to reach up and take us all.
We didn't have any flooding, so there's that. That's good. Oh. I know you had some issues this week, apparently.
Yeah, the office above mine at my day job, their sprinkler, like their fire system sprinkler, went off unexpectedly. And of course, because they can't turn it off until they have the permission of the fire department to say, hey, there's no fire, water is just pouring down. And I think it went, their office is on the 12th floor, and 11 through down to 3 had water damage.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
I'm on 11, so we got the worst of it.
Yeah, and that happened on Sunday night, didn't it?
Sunday night, yeah. I just sat down to eat dinner, and I get the call. So I ended up at work for 4.5 hours and did not get to eat until 11:30 at night.
Oh, joy.
Great.
Yep. Nothing like work to ruin your life.
That's true. And nothing like work to ruin a weekend, isn't it true?
Yeah, so I don't know. There hasn't been a ton of news since we were on last week, but the Tigers did give us a little bit of meager fuel to power this kind of jalopy of a podcast for another week. A little bit of interesting detail. The Tigers made a pair of signings, both of them of the minor league variety. They picked up Gordon Beckham, second baseman, who many of you will remember from his
White Sox years.
Yes, his ignominious days as the White Sox kind of miserable second baseman. And then the...
Now he's our miserable second baseman, maybe.
Yeah. Hopefully we won't see him, but I don't know. We kind of figure these moves are mostly depth for spring training.
For anyone who didn't read the post, it's a minor league signing with an invitation, a non-roster invitation to spring training. So it's not like they've given him $1 million to play second base. It is just a, hey, let's see how bad you really are now.
Yeah, and if the Tigers want to go with a kind of bad second baseman, they have plenty available to them. They could use Nico Goodrum, and that'd be fine by me, or Lugo, or whatever else they want to decide to do.
I heard somebody mention it might be an opportunity. They might use him just as kind of a piece in between to let Lugo kind of stretch out in AAA for a little bit. And it's just kind of as like a dam stopper in the meantime. And that actually made a lot of sense to me. Like, I don't see him being the everyday second baseman. He's played 33 games the last two seasons combined.
I
think his average last season was like a 182. So he is most certainly not our solution at second base, but I would not be surprised to see him play in Detroit at some time next year.
No, I'm afraid I would not be shocked either. I mean, you know, maybe this is just a matter of like, this guy's out here, we could just grab him for next to nothing, stash him in the minor leagues, and hopefully he never sees the light of day in Detroit, but we just don't know.
Yeah, I think according to Morosi, the deal was like $700,000 if he makes it to the big club. So it's by no means a huge contract, and that's a big caveated if right there.
And the Tigers also made a second move and picked up his former Giants and Padres for a little bit, catcher Hector Sanchez, on the same type of deal. Minor league contract, invitation to spring training, not a very expensive deal. Although Hector Sanchez is actually a little bit more interesting in that because the Tigers are so kind of weak at the catcher position, at least until Jake Rogers gets here, you can actually see Hector Sanchez kind of being, you know, one of the better hitters they have in their sort of pool of mediocre talent at this point. He had an interesting career too. I don't know if people remember him very well, but he was with the Giants kind of all through their World Series winning romp up until 2016. So he's got rings from 2012 and 2014 and caught Tim Lincecum's second no-hitter, I believe. So he's been around. He's played on some good teams, at least. When you're Buster Posey's backup, you're probably not going to get a chance to do a whole lot. And he's 29 now, so don't expect him to kind of reemerge. But he was okay in the Dominican Winter League over the past couple months. And you know, he's always kind of been a decent defender and framer. And yeah, he might be a bit of help down there. We just don't know. Like, it's just hard to imagine you know, Hicks after the surgery and everything. Like, you just don't know. It just doesn't feel right to expect a whole lot of catching out of John Hicks. So maybe they're kind of auditioning backups between him and Bobby Wilson. But yeah, just kind of another. I know. It's just kind of another. You know, just kind of another fairly meaningless depth move. But Hector Sanchez actually isn't that bad, and if you have him and Bobby Wilson down there, you know, they'll handle the pitching staff down there well and probably teach some guys some things. Both of them are kind of on the "we're going to be coaches before too long" track anyway, so they can get a start on that. I 100%
forgot the Tigers picked up Bobby Wilson again.
Yep, so we've got both of them down there, you know. Yeah, I mean, both of them are experienced, you know, and as long as they're not playing in the majors, that's fine. But I think, obviously, both of us would still like to see the Tigers go out and sign a second baseman and a catcher who are of at least some quality and could provide above replacement value this season, at least to help out. That would be nice. Yeah,
to me, though, these moves suggest that we are not going to get our wish.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were both already feeling that way. I don't know that these guys, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you might do even if you were set at the position just to kind of build up your depth, I suppose. So I guess we don't know for sure, but yeah, it doesn't feel real good. So
no.
Yeah. And you know, maybe these guys won't even survive spring training, but especially in Sanchez's case, it's, you know, I don't really want to see the Tigers keep Jake Rogers at Erie for a whole nother season when he already had a pretty darn good season there last year. I don't really see the point in slow playing him too much. I'd kind of like to get him to the majors as soon as he's, you know, remotely ready and start to work.
Test him in the real water. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, start to catch at the major league level, work with the, you know, the Bain coaching staff and the young pitchers and stuff like that up here. Yeah, it doesn't look like that's going to happen this year the way they're kind of stocking up. Maybe a September call-up is still a possibility, but yeah, it's looking less likely.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, nothing terribly scintillating. It was almost sad to see the response to the Hector Sanchez signing article because people are so starved for news that it was doing fantastic traffic, and I was just like, oh, this is depressing, man.
We're so desperate for anything.
Yeah, any news, we will take it. Yeah, so, you know, we've kind of kept on with our usual coverage. There have been a few more Tigers prospect reports. I had Sandy Baez, who's our 19th-ranked prospect, out today. Sergio Alcantara, shortstop, who reached Erie last season, was the number 20 prospect, and you'll find his scouting report on our front page as well. But, yeah, again, like, the Tigers just aren't really doing anything, and nothing is happening in free agency still, so...
So boring.
Nick Markakis signed with the Braves, went back on, I think, like a
$6 million.
Yeah, like some incentive laden kind of 1 year deal. But that's just it. And really nobody has moved. I mean, we've still got Keuchel, obviously Machado and Harper, AJ Pollock, a bunch of relievers.
I think former Tigers Zach McAllister signed with the Rangers on a 1 year deal today.
Yeah, for like maybe $1 million basically. Yeah. Which I wouldn't have minded doing actually.
I know, thank you.
Yeah, I know, Zach McAllister is no one we're going to miss. And the bullpen actually might be a little bit better this year, even without him, just because we've finally got some guys at Toledo lining up who should be some help. We kind of talked about this. I guess probably the most popular article on the site this past week has been the roundtable about...
the better, worse, same?
Yeah, like, at each position, are the Tigers better? Are they the same? Are they worse? It's got a lot of traffic, and there's been a lot of arguments going on there that have been fun to kind of participate in and watch unfold.
I really appreciated Rob throwing me under the bus on Christian Stewart. That was nice.
Oh, yeah, that was nice. Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to know how much his defense is going to hold him back. I mean, the Tigers, I think, were below replacement value at left field last season, so I'm pretty confident he's going to be better, but I don't know how much... the bat is going to outweigh the, you know, the defense out there. He actually didn't look terrible defensively. You know, he looks like he can get around and cover some ground out there okay and make the plays he gets to, but...
History will vindicate me on my choice.
I think you might be right to some degree, yeah. Like, I'm not expecting him to come right out and hit 35 bombs, although he's certainly capable of it. But he will...
Oh, I think his bat is going to be fine. Yeah. I just think he is going to be an atrocious nightmare in the field, is what I think.
Yeah, we're going to find out. I can tell people if they haven't seen much of Kristen Stewart, like, you are going to be horrified by his arm, first and foremost. That'll be the thing that really just kind of blows everybody's mind, because it's very much like a Delmon Young type of, you know, this guy can't really throw it, you know, 150 feet in the air unless he... unless he rears back and unloads. So yeah, I don't know. You know, that's a position where, you know, we should be better, but it's not going to be real exciting. I don't know. I mean, I have some optimism. I think probably I was a little more optimistic than some, just because I think the pitching depth, especially at the AAA level, is going to play into how good the team is overall in terms of their pitching staff. And, you know, I mean, it can be pie in the sky to look at, like, Norris, Boyd, and Fulmer and say, well, I think they'll all be better. But, you know, based on their ages and kind of what they did last season, you know, it's just a matter of, like, can they stay healthy? Because if they can stay healthy, you know, Fulmer and Norris should be pretty good, or at least helpful. So, yeah.
Yeah, health is the big thing for Norris, I think. Health and mindset, and he'll be fine.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting because, you know, I've been following him on Instagram and seeing kind of, and stalking him. Okay, that's fine. And seeing what he's up to. And, you know, I've seen him working with one of those Rapsodo units, which, you know, measures spin rate, velocity, spin axis, all that stuff. And he's been working with one of those. And I know Matt Boyd has gone to Driveline and worked there most off seasons over the past couple years, too. So it's kind of nice to see, you know, Norris kind of getting in on the data revolution there as well and using those tools in the off season. Kind of help himself out. And he's also been training in Taekwondo, which you know, he's not taking kicks or punches, he's only delivering them, so hopefully this is relatively safe activity. But you know, the thing about Taekwondo is that guys who train in Taekwondo in mixed martial arts, and I'm a long time mixed martial arts UFC fan going all the way back to the Pride days, like, those dudes have, you know, just exceptional leg dexterity and hip mobility. So, I mean, it does make sense, since those have been the issues that he's had with his delivery and with his body, that maybe something like that can play a little part in helping him out and keeping him healthy all year.
That would be neat. I never even thought of that.
You remember, it was like a year or two ago when Nick Castellanos was doing all that weird, like...
Oh, the weird floor exercises? Yeah, yes, I remember that 100%.
It's like that slow-flowing yoga-looking stuff.
Fun of it, and now Chris Hemsworth is posting videos of himself doing the same damn thing, so Nick might have just been ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name, but yeah, he was working with Conor McGregor, the MMA fighter, a couple years ago, and it kind of just spread like wildfire from there, all this, like, sort of... you know, natural movement theory that they were bringing to it. But yeah, I remember seeing Castellanos doing those and was just sort of like, huh. Not really the guy I would have thought of as being into some exotic training methods, but never know. Nick's a well-traveled
individual. Whatever works, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we'll just have to see how the rotation shakes out. As far as the bullpen, it'll be nice to see Joe with a good year under his belt and a little more experience come out there and see what Mr. Jimenez has got. Got Victor Alcantara, Drew Verhagen, obviously Blaine Hardy. Some of those right-handers, you know, came on last year and showed some signs that they may be useful. So we'll get to see some of those guys again. And yeah, you know, maybe Spencer Turnbull, Zach Houston, who was the closer at Toledo by last year's end, who has pretty nasty stuff and should be interesting. Yeah, so there's some guys to look forward to. The pitching staff might not be sort of better overall, but maybe more consistent, just because the support coming from the minor leagues should be better. Should be. We'll see.
Theoretically, yeah. The shoulda, woulda.
Yeah, and then I played around. I played around with some minor league spray charts, because they've started to post these at MLB's The Farm site, like their prospect site. And we had a whole kind of wrangle this morning between me and our friend Adam Dubin and a couple other people, the Lansing Lugnuts broadcaster. We're all kind of talking about, like, how accurate these things are, and it seems like they're fairly accurate. There was a guy at Fangraphs who did some kind of testing on the actual raw data to see if the charts actually looked like what the data said they should look like, and apparently they're not too bad, but you can see that on our front page as well. It's just kind of fun to look at, like, Parker Meadows, who's a prep prospect, only 18 years old this year, and he hit some really long home runs to right field. He's a left-handed center fielder. So you can kind of get an idea that, like, oh yeah, maybe this guy's got some raw power. You can see Jake Rogers kind of spraying deep drives and home runs to all part of the park, whereas Isaac Paredes is more of a pull power hitter, although he does go to all fields too. So I don't know, there were some interesting little things to glean from that, although you can't take it for gospel, because it's not actual TrackMan StatCast certified.
Just more for us to obsess over.
Yep, exactly. Yep, I'd been looking at them and was like, I bet people don't even know these are out here. I'll put this out there and kind of promote them
a little
bit.
That's neat. I hadn't even heard of that, so that's actually really cool that they have that now.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they, you know, if we could go deeper with the minor league guys and get, you know, velocity and spin rate and all that kind of business, but they're probably ways from that happening. Yeah, that's about it for the Tigers, right? Is there anything else?
I don't think so. It's been such a light week. I know I talked to Brandon today. I'm like, are we recording? And he's like, I don't even know what we have to talk about.
Yep, I know.
But then they blessed us with a Gordon Beckham signing, so you guys are welcome.
Yeah. The only thing I really remember, I mean, I remember Gordon Beckham and him not being good, but I just remember that he was sort of like, he was sort of a fan favorite of the ladies. That's all I can say.
I don't remember Gordon Beckham being at all a point of attractive interest, but I don't know.
So yeah, so
maybe, I also love Jason Kipnis, so maybe I have weird taste.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Yeah, Ashley is Canadian.
Is that impacts my ability? Do we just like people who look like they can weather a winter? You look like you'll survive to farm another day.
Yep, like that guy can grow a beard and keep his face from freezing off in the wintertime.
Gordon
Beckham, I don't think can. He's kind of a...
I'm making fun of this, but you're making some real valid points about finding a mate in Canada, so I'm not going to dispute it.
Yeah, home of the world's, you know, greatest beard-growing championships, no doubt, I would imagine.
We actually have a beard contest. As a digression here, every year in February, we have in Manitoba something called Festival de Voyageurs. And the Voyageurs were like these hardy, like Frenchmen who like traversed the wilderness in canoes and shit like that.
The trappers and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of celebrate that. And yes, we put maple syrup on snow. That is a real thing. You put maple syrup and snow in a line and you wrap it around a popsicle stick and you eat that. That's a real thing with tortilla. But there is a beard contest at Festival de Voyageurs every year. So all of these things, these jokes, they are based in reality. I can't even dispute it.
Nice. Is this a real beard tournament where, like, you know, density and length matters more so than a bunch of oils and fancy little crap going on?
As much as you might think it would be my cup of tea to attend this event, I've never actually been. I just know that it, you know what? Last year I went to Festival for the first time since university, like since maybe high school.
Oh, yeah.
And I just got in a line because there was a line, and apparently this is what Canadians do. If there's a line, we get in it and wait 40 minutes without knowing what it's for.
Just queue up, yeah.
And it was for a split pea soup contest.
Oh,
I kid you not. And oh my god, what a delightful accident that was to get in line for. There was some truly magnificent soup in that contest.
Oh, did you get to try everything?
Yeah, you get in, like, and it was all, like, the fancy restaurants from around town doing, like, really, like, upscale versions of split pea soup. So it was, like, you know, garlic aioli reductions and, like, pork belly. And so you got little sample cups of everything from, like, 12 or 15 different stations. It was tremendous.
Oh, actually, that does sound pretty good. It also sounds like something that would happen in the Upper Peninsula, and so I know it's Canadian.
We've spread our traditions to the UP.
Yeah, exactly, yep. They've always looked to the north there, yep.
They're like a secondary Canada, we'll allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'd like to be a secondary Canada sometimes. Especially these days. So yeah. Yeah.
So other baseball news. We gotta have something to talk. I mean, today being Tuesday as we record this, they just announced the Hall of Fame inductees.
Yep, little old place called Cooperstown apparently is getting some new residents.
Yeah, so the first ever unanimous vote.
Yep.
Occurred with Mariano Rivera, and I know people knew he would be a first ballot inductee, but I am actually shocked he was unanimous.
Yeah, the first ever. I mean, that is kind of hard to believe. And I've actually seen people kind of mad about that, like, why would he be the first unanimous? You know, Babe Ruth didn't blah blah blah. That's all well and good, but it just means
the closer. That to me is the shocking part, just because of how contentious the idea of closers in the Hall of Fame is. That it's that even though he is the best, like undisputed, amazing, deserves to be there, it's still surprising that a closer would be the first one to get a unanimous vote.
Yeah, and you know, he's just so beloved too. I mean, I really do think that's part of it. Like no one wanted to be the guy that didn't vote for Mariano Rivera.
The guy that didn't want to literally didn't submit a ballot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love Mariano Rivera. I've read his biography, you know, absolutely fascinating cat. Obviously, you know, the greatest reliever of all time. But it is kind of funny. It's just kind of funny that he'd be the first to be unanimous. And the problem isn't that he's unanimous. The problem is that so many other people have not been. Like, Greg Maddux wasn't a unanimous.
We were talking about the two, wasn't it? Like, weird. Like, Willie Horton wasn't unanimous.
Nobody else.
Nobody who is in. Like, it's ludicrous.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. I mean, the Hall of Fame is just, you know, once you kind of, I don't know how other people out there feel, but, you know, once you kind of grow up and, like, you're kind of over it, you know, like, okay, you know, we know who the best players are. We don't need the Hall necessarily to tell us. I kind of think of it more just as, you know, it's a museum that you kind of have, you know, everybody and all kinds of interesting stuff in it, even if they're not voted in or not. But, it's just a little bit funky. Like, the whole procedure is just kind of peculiar the way it goes. And Jeff Passan, who now, I believe, has moved over from Yahoo to ESPN, or maybe is it Jeff Passan? Maybe it is Jeff Passan.
I think it's Jeff Passan.
I think it probably is. Anyway, he was saying that, I think, what was it? What were the numbers? It was something like, of all the people who didn't vote for Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens, basically like 45% of those people, of the 193 voters whose ballots remained private, only 45.6% voted for Roger Clemens and 45.1% for Barry Bonds, whereas the 232 voters who did reveal their ballots, 71% voted for Roger Clemens and 70.6% voted for Barry Bonds. So it's just kind of funny that the people who don't want their ballot being revealed and tied to their name are the ones who are still kind of the holdouts on Clemens and Bonds, despite, you know, plenty of other PED-type guys being in there, and the two of them probably being the best player and best pitcher of all time, or pretty darn close.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's peculiar. But, you know, that's the way it goes. And there were some other nominees beyond Mariano. Mike Mussina, who had accumulated a high enough war total that I know Jay Jaffe's Jaws system, you know, kind of looked at his peak, and it wasn't sort of elite, but his overall body of work was pretty darn good. He got in as well. He's been on the ballot for a long time and kind of been one of those guys that has been argued kind of over quite a bit. And then Edgar Martinez.
Yeah, Seattle fans have got to be super pumped now.
Yeah, I mean, they've been advocating for him for so hard for such a long time now. They've got to be pretty gratified. I know a lot of people were really excited on Twitter about that.
I feel like our friends at Lookout Landing spent half of the season kind of really pushing for it.
Yep. He's their Lou Whitaker over there. They're like, this one, give Truly. Us this one guy. He's got to get in.
Just let us have Edgar.
Yep. I mean, you know, they'll have Ichiro eventually too, but yeah. Seattle is kind of lacking a little bit in Hall of Famers. I can't even remember what Ken Griffey Jr. went in wearing.
Did he not go in as a Mariner?
Maybe. I think maybe he did.
But I would assume so.
Yeah, I would assume so too.
Somebody's going to write us a comment.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Gotta be.
Of course, as I'm trying to Google this, my thing isn't even typing.
Yeah, I need to know this.
I do too. Yeah. Hold on.
He had to go, right? He had to go in under the Mariners hat. I can't really believe it could go any other way.
What is he wearing? Hold on. Here are Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza Hall of Fame plaques from CBS. Load slower, CBS Sports.
Get it together.
Mike Piazza is wearing a Mets hat, of course. Yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. is wearing a Mariners cap.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Had to. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have felt wrong any other way.
Yeah, exactly. So they got their guy, and, you know, there haven't been very many DHs elected ever to the Hall of Fame, so it's pretty cool. Edgar Martinez had a spectacular long career. So however you feel about kind of the DH and the Hall of Fame, once you let one in, you have to kind of consider them all as a bunch, and Edgar definitely was worthy, so it was pretty cool to see him get in. And then the final one was Roy Halladay, who tragically died in a plane crash last year, not too much off from just like almost a year ago today, I believe. I think it was like last December.
Really recent.
Yeah. Feels like. Yeah, but of course, you know, threw a no-hitter in the postseason, you know, just had a spectacular career, particularly with the Phillies. And he got in as well on his first year of eligibility. So that was a pretty...
That's not surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like he would have made it in regardless. I don't know if he would have been a first ballot inductee if he hadn't died.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's another one of those ones where kind of like Mariano, it's like, you know, Roy Halladay was really pretty well beloved and, kind of was notorious, known for helping out younger players and being really good with his time with the media and, you know, with minor league players, people coming up and asking him questions. It's just kind of was always just a pretty beloved character. So, you know, I mean, that stuff does kind of weigh into it. You know, on the flip side of that, we have Curt Schilling, who didn't get in again, despite numbers that, you know, put him maybe a little bit on the fringe, but, you know, probably would get him in if he hadn't, you know, done a whole bunch of dumb stuff.
And if he wasn't just a belligerent turd.
Yeah, just kind of a reprehensible individual. I mean, you know, it just is what it is. We could say, you know, it should just be about, you know, baseball and what the guys did on the field, but this is a guy who, you know, called, like, the victims of Sandy Hook and a couple other school shootings, you know, crisis actors, and that they were part of a hoax. Like, it just goes on and on. I don't really want to get into Curt Schilling and every horrific thing he's ever said or did. But that stuff does kind of play into it. You know, like, what you did in the past, like, maybe wouldn't matter so much if it wasn't that they were going to have to give you this huge platform to get up there and have no idea what, you know, god-awful garbage might come out of your mouth.
Somebody in our SB Nation MLB chat mentioned that they think he'll get in posthumously. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's really the only way I see that being okay.
Yeah. 'Cause
you're right. Who wants to give him a platform to make a nice big speech? You know, like...
Yep, it's just tough, you know, it's a club, you know, from the outside, it's like a, you know, it's this honor that is given to you for the facts, the things you actually did on the field, but there's just so much that goes into it, kind of in the culture behind the scenes of baseball, and like, you know, who's popular, who's kind of, you know, in the in-group, who likes each other, you know, all that stuff does kind of play into these things. I think I said this last week, but if you went to the Hall of Fame, you know, ceremonies, and then kind of talked to everyone after, and like Barry Bonds showed up, Barry Bonds is right in the center of that group, and everybody respects the hell out of and loves Barry Bonds. You know, that's, you know, there's a disconnect there considered, you know, compared to how, you know, maybe some fans and obviously some of the older media members still kind of feel about him. But Curt Schilling in that group would be extraordinarily uncomfortable, I imagine. So,
yeah,
as would Pete Rose, which is why Pete Rose still isn't in there, because he's just sort of never straightened up and, you know, and kind of just got it back to just being about baseball.
And then even worse stuff came out about him.
Yeah, it just keeps going. You know, meanwhile, you know, obviously, you know, Barry Bonds has, you know, allegations of domestic violence in the past. He has, you know, I think, didn't Roger Clemens has a whole bunch of crap, you know, of similar sort, even beyond the PEDs, but because that's all sort of behind them and they get along well with others and can play nice now, you know, it's sort of like they're put into a different category. And it's all sketchy. I mean, it's all just a very subjective thing, and we try our best to make it seem otherwise, I think. And, you know, a lot of writers out there trying to come up with a perfect algorithm and all that. Shout out to Jay Jaffe, though, who is awesome, and whose Jaws system is super cool.
I love Jaws. Okay, can I just talk about Jaws for a second?
Oh, yeah,
please. I'm obsessed with it.
Please go, because I really feel like
a lot of people don't know about Jaws. And so Jaws is a system, as I drop my phone, oh my God. Jaws is a system developed by Jay Jaffe, and I'm not going to get the mathematics of it right, but basically it averages player war over the top 7 seasons of their career, roughly. This is such a rough, basic explanation. So it basically takes the war of their best 7 seasons and creates a number that is their Jaws score, with the intent of kind of identifying a better system for figuring out who belongs in the Hall of Fame and who truly is the best at their position. And so Baseball Reference actually has it listed. So if you go and Google, you can search catcher Jaws, and it will pull up a list of catcher rankings by Jaws. And you'll be able to see, based on that, who already is in the Hall of Fame. And it's actually a pretty good system, because you'll usually find that the top 10 in everyone are already in the Hall of Fame, and the ones just below that top 10 line are, most of them are as well. I'm fascinated by it. And it's a metric I pull out a lot, so if you ever read my stuff, I talk about Jaws quite a bit.
The motivation is to, like, really give people a sense of, like, okay, this is this player at their peak, you know, for 7 years, this is the absolute best that they could do, which is super cool, because it really helps kind of cut out some of the guys, you know, you think back to, like, someone like Sandy Koufax or someone like that, who didn't maybe pitch as long as they could have because of injury, and there's some other guys like that, where that peak argument really shows you, like, okay, you know, for 7 years, this guy was an absolute monster, he deserves to be in. And yeah, I think it's pretty useful that way. Like, I'm a big advocate for durability too, and like guys who, you know, obviously I'm a Justin Verlander honk, and that's one of the key arguments I always make about Justin Verlander is that whatever you think of Clayton Kershaw, you know, I would rather have Justin Verlander on my team because I know he's going to throw me, you know, 200 plus innings and still be like going 100% in the postseason. Whereas, you know, with Clayton Kershaw, it's just a little bit more arguable. That's not a shot at him. I love Clayton Kershaw. He's an amazing pitcher. And by a lot of metrics, you could make the case that he's a better pitcher than Justin Verlander. But I do like kind of having both. I like having that Jaws peak argument. And I also like having kind of like
the durability.
The broad picture, you know, like how long were you good? Because if you were great for 7 years and another guy was just really good for 14 years, like I'm still kind of leaning toward the guy who was just really good. But it's really just a super cool system to kind of give you that base number to go off of. So
a fun fact, I just pulled up starting pitcher Jaws just for the sake of amusement. And in the top 30, there were three pitchers who were not in the Hall of Fame as of yesterday. Mike Messina being number 29, and he is obviously in now. Jim McCormick at 18 is not in. He played from, you'd be forgiven for not knowing who Jim McCormick is, because I sure don't at a glance. Because he played from 1878 to 1887.
Oh, wow.
And number 27 is Curt Schilling. Like,
yeah,
he absolutely has the numbers to warrant it. Number one of all time is Walter Johnson, by the way. 1907 to 1927 had a career high seven-year average for his Jaws of 127.4.
Wow. Holy
shit.
Wow.
His war over those periods is 165.
Wow.
And then Cy Young. Oh, I lied. There's one other pitcher not in the Hall of Fame on this list, and it's Roger Clemens at number three.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't even look that high. But yeah, it's Walter Johnson, Cy Young, and Roger Clemens are your top three. If you never looked at catcher war, at war in general, it's just a fascinating, Jaws, I should say. It's fascinating. Truly. So yeah, it's career war averaged with their seven-year peak war. Oh, so the career war is factored in.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so I find it... Anyway, so just... I had it pulled up today because I was talking about Joe Mauer, as I sometimes do, because I am a lifelong advocate now. Lifelong being... This is something I picked up last year. But for the rest of my life, it's going to be my thing. Advocate for catchers getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, because they really are underrepresented.
Underrepresented, like, for sure. And people are arguing with me about Joe Mauer, but Joe Mauer has the seventh highest career Jaws of any catcher in baseball history.
Yeah, he's a lot.
He is the only person in the top 10 who is not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously he's not eligible yet, but 5 years from now, Joe Mauer should get in real quick, I would imagine.
To me, I would first ballot Joe Mauer, and I mentioned it.
Kind of Bill Freehan. No, it's too late for that.
Everybody, I'm going to get a t-shirt made that says Bill Freehan for Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you should.
So that I can just like spread the gospel to others as they ask me about my shirt.
Yep.
But I was just pointing out that it's going to be an interesting class in 5 years because it'll be Joe Mauer's first year of eligibility, Adrian Beltre's, Victor Martinez, who I don't think is going to make it.
Probably.
He'll be eligible that same year. Somebody mentioned Chase Utley, I think, is going to be that same class.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be a really interesting... And it's weird for me because I haven't been watching baseball as long as some people have. So now it's getting to the point where like guys that were playing when I started watching are getting their inductions. I'm like, oh, this is weird that the guys I'm watching retire are now getting inducted. Like, of course, I watched Rivera and I watched like these guys play. So
yeah,
very interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been a big year kind of for Hall of Fame stuff just because, I mean, for Tiger fans seeing, however you feel about Jack Morris, I didn't really think he deserved to be in, but I was still happy for him. And I grew up watching Jack Morris and thinking he was the shit. So it was super cool to see him get elected. And it was also just amazing because Alan Trammell was, you know, my childhood hero. Like, I patterned everything I did in the summer as a child until I was probably like 13 or 14 on wanting to be like Alan Trammell as a shortstop. So yeah, it was just super cool to finally see those two guys get in. We just, you know, we gotta get Lou in there. We gotta get Freehan in there. And you know, the other cool thing about Jaws and its look at catchers is that it makes a pretty good point that, you know, Lance Parrish was really freaking good. Like, there's a couple other guys who should certainly be ahead of him and aren't in yet, but Lance Parrish was an amazing, amazing defensive catcher and had a lot of power and probably did put together seven seasons that should convince a lot of people to get him in there, too. So,
Freehan is 14th on the list, which is why I get real fired up. But Lance Parrish is 25. Like, there's no, like, because we were talking about Yadier Molina's chances of getting into the Hall of Fame today, and yay, nay, whatever, like Yadier or not, I don't. But
I kind of do, but I think he gets a little overrated.
Something about him rubs me the wrong way.
I know, he's salty. He's salty. I kind of like that.
Yeah, some guys, like, maybe give me an Ian Kinsler level of salt, I'm all for it, but also he was a Tiger, so yeah. I think I was super biased.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, Lance Parrish is 25, and that's above Molina, who most of us consider to be a pretty much a lock on at least, not of maybe a first round, but a pretty good chance of a Hall of Fame vote. But I pointed out, too, it was interesting, because Jorge Posada, who dropped off the ballot after his first year, is 17.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's a pretty interesting...
And that's a Yankee with a ton of rings.
Yeah, I know. Like, he had everything. I think I wrote about him in my piece for Hardball Times, where I talked about catchers that should have kind of a second look. I don't know that Jorge Posada really has a case for it, but I think given his Jaws metrics and given, you know, those rings that he has and his tenure with the Yankees, it's actually quite surprising that he didn't get more votes.
Yeah, there's just this weird, it's just a weird bias against catchers. Like, everyone understands it. Everyone knows that you can't expect catchers to play as many games or produce the way, you know, you'd expect a right fielder or third baseman to, but they just haven't figured out a way to sort of make it work in a way that's convincing to enough people, I suppose. Because, it kind of feels like things have turned a little bit. There's some recognition. We had Mike Piazza get in 2016. Ivan Rodriguez was elected in 2017.
I think in our next Arrows vote, you might see a guy like Ted Simmons.
Yeah.
Ted Simmons is, like, really wildly overlooked. He's 10th. In the list of all time. Like, and I know Ted Simmons was a Cardinal, right? I'm not making that up.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yep.
Yeah. For his whole career. I'm not crazy. I know things. He finished out his career in Atlanta, of all places, but spent 13 years with the Cards, so I'm not crazy. But yeah, just a tremendous career. Like, holy crap, 8-time All-Star, Silver Slugger winner, but no ring.
Yeah, and it gets, and at that point, like, guys like that, like, it all comes down to reputation, because we can't access, like, the defensive metrics of any of these guys. It's weird when you look at, like, Fangraphs or Baseball Reference, and you see that there's a defensive, component of WAR included, and I've looked into it briefly, and I have no understanding of how they can even begin to, have an accurate number. I mean, we struggle enough with players that are playing right now, let alone defense for guys in the, playing in the 70s and stuff and 80s. So
yeah, and it's extra tough too, because you look at guys, especially in, like, the Negro Leagues era, you can't calculate any of their scores because almost nothing was actually tracked, which,
yeah, sucks. There was, like, a huge campaign to get Biz Mackey, who was a catcher in the Negro Leagues, got inducted, I think, back in, like, 05 or 06, and that was kind of like, the dam breaking, like, people finally realizing, like, we're just gonna we can't just go by the numbers or whatever, we're gonna have to figure out a way to, kind of take what people said about them and all that different stuff and make it count to some degree, and let, reputation kind of carry some of these guys. Because, yeah, the catchers are just underrepresented. And if I think we both kind of fit this kind of profile, where we both think of the Hall of Fame as, like, someplace that should have everything, like, should cover the whole game and be a museum for the game.
I'm
not worried about a small hall anymore. It's like, it's way too late for that. Harold Baines is, I'm sorry.
The general consensus of what puts somebody in the Hall of Fame shouldn't just be their numbers. Like, even if you look at what the Hall of Fame write-up is, it's their contributions to the game. So I look at guys and, like, we talk about things that have developed. Like, when in my article, and I'm going to forget the names because I just, I wrote an article and I forgot. But there was a catcher for the Yankees, who is, like, their their first like major league or the first black coach to work in the Yankees organization, like everything. But he developed the weighted thing that goes at the end of the bat, the donut.
Oh, the donut. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, how do you not acknowledge that, as stupid as that is, how much that's impacted the game? That this guy not only was the first like black manager at any level in the AL and in the Yankees organization and like played alongside fucking Jackie Robinson and invented this donut, and he doesn't get any attention at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously there's the Negro Leagues Museum, which is super cool in its own right, but
it's beautiful.
But yeah, that should have its own wing in the hall as well. Cause yeah, it's just an absolutely fascinating part of the game that most people don't really know about.
It's like, how did this thing that you see in every single game get developed, and how has that changed things? Like, who invented cup balancing in a bat? Why do I care? I don't know.
Who was the first person to tripod three bats and sit on it?
Who did that, right? Like, I find the whole thing, I'm having to look up this guy's name because I feel like such a dipshit for not actually knowing it. It's Elston Howard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not familiar. You know, I have to go back, though, because I just really like the idea of, like, people at Google or something being like, why are all these Bill Freehand searches coming from Winnipeg? This is weird. you're walking around in your shirt, and people are just like, who is
she? I just want to break down Elston Howard, because he was really fascinating. So he was the first black player with the Yankees, the first black player to win the AL MVP, a four-time World Series winner, a two-time Gold Glove winner, a 12-time All-Star, 36th of all time in Jaws. He was the first black coach in the AL, the first, he was a first base coach for the Yankees for 10 seasons, and he invented the weighted donut that players used to practice in the on-deck circle. Like, he's one of the retired numbers at Yankee Stadium, and he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're a retired number in the Yankees, like, come on.
I mean, the Yankees have all of the numbers retired. That's true.
They do.
They're just going to start using symbols.
Yep. And then, yep. And I don't know if Mike Messina will get his number retired now, but that seems like at least a decent possibility. It was cool seeing, there's this, a famous clip of Mike Messina telling Joe Torre to get back in the dugout when he came to get him and then striking out the guy anyway, and just kind of like ignoring Joe Torre after that. But that was pretty funny. One of the cool things about this is just kind of seeing all those sort of classic moments get kind of rehashed and stuff. I've seen quite a few people recirculating the Miguel Cabrera versus Mariano Rivera at bat from, I think it was early September 2013, when Miggy fouled two pitches off his leg and was hobbled and staggering around, and then blasted one out to dead center to tie the game in the ninth. That's kind of a classic moment that Mariano probably doesn't like to remember as much. But and the other thing about Edgar Martinez, to switch it over there and to keep bouncing around, is that, you know, David Ortiz is going to be eligible in a couple years. And it was sort of, it kind of felt like you had, if you're not, you know, if you're going to elect David Ortiz, and we all know you are, you got to get Edgar in there too. Because before that, I think Frank Thomas was the only designated, like, regular designated hitter that had ever been elected. So, yeah, getting Edgar in there kind of opens things up for Big Poppy there, I believe.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's going to make it a lot easier for people to justify doing that as a first-round vote. Like, maybe, I don't know. I don't even know what it's so hard to know.
Yeah, Edgar's been on the ballot a couple times, but
I just wonder about Ortiz.
Yeah, you just wonder too. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about Mariano getting in, unanimously on his first try. Maybe that'll kind of break the dam, because obviously there's just been a weird like taboo on doing that, even with pitchers and players that were absolute lock Hall of Famers. No one's just ever wanted to there's always been some loser who had to dissent for whatever reason. So yeah, hopefully this will kind of break that down and people will kind of come to their senses and just start putting these guys in. If they're a Hall of Famer, they're a Hall of Famer. That's it.
Yeah, it's true.
Chop, chop. Time's a wasting.
Just get it over with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, did Ortiz retire end of 2016? So, 2021. Okay.
Just a minor thing that popped up in our channel, too. Apparently, the Mariners officially did re-sign Suzuki, Ichiro Suzuki, to a minor league deal, basically entirely, so he can play in that opening series in Japan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
that's really, I think a lot of people assumed that would be the case.
Yeah.
That he would, you know, they'd sign him again, he would play in that series and then officially retire. And I think it's kind of cool to get to see that they're actually doing that.
Yep. Oh, I love that guy. Ah, he's one person I would never be bitter. It is just like kind of hanging around, taking up a roster spot. It's okay. He can
right?
do whatever.
Yeah. it makes me super happy.
Yeah. I just want to see him and Ohtani hang out again.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That meeting was pretty cool. That was just an interesting meeting, just to see the kind of extra respect that came out of Ohtani for him. You know,
the bad MLB tweets aside, that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, was that the Spider-Man?
It was the two Spider-Man. Yeah, I'm like, no, they're both Japanese. That's it.
Sorry, one of them's 6'5" and the other one's 5'10". Yeah, they don't look alike. Anyway, someone whiffed badly on that meme. Tragically, yeah. Even. Yeah. So yeah, there's the Hall of Fame kind of wrapped up in a nice little bundle for you. I'm trying to think if there's anything else Tiger-wise to even touch on before we just kind of go to listener questions. I think let's just do that. Maybe they'll bring up some absolute stumpers here that irritate me. We'll see.
Let's bring it on. Let's try.
Someone's like, will Nick Castellanos be traded? And who would... Something like
maybe,
that.
Maybe. But I don't think that they're going to get an offer they like for him.
Yeah. Okay. David Zek asks, the Tigers haven't been in a position in the past to play the service time game with their prospects, but now that they're starting to graduate real prospects, do you foresee them withholding those promotions to preserve the extra year of service time, or do you think they will continue to promote based on merit? That's interesting. Yeah, that is a good question, because the Tigers, you know, are holding out a little bit on Michael Fulmer in arbitration. That doesn't mean maybe they'll get that done and continue their streak, but it does feel like things are a little bit different. I hate it when teams do that. Honestly, yeah. I kind of think it, the whole thing is dirty. But that's something that's probably going to have to be addressed in the next collective bargaining agreement. And you know, the Tigers might need to do that. I mean, if everybody else is, the Tigers probably need to get every advantage they can. And doing that, you know, does a lot of times give you an extra year. And just to explain to anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, if you hold a player back and don't start them in the major leagues until, say, May, they don't accumulate an entire year of service time. And so, essentially, that year doesn't count, and you get to keep them an extra year after that. What was that, Dottie?
No, that was Ziggy.
Ziggy, what's up, dude?
He's being such an asshole right now. He keeps walking into the room and screaming at me and then walking away.
Yeah, all my food is in my bowl, but it's not in a shape that I like anymore.
No, no, it's, you know what it is? There's food in my bowl, but I can see the bottom of the dish. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cats hate that. It's weird.
I don't know what it is. I feel like it's a sign of starvation coming or something.
Yeah, I better go sound the alarm.
So the thing about Ziggy is he's 16 years old.
Oh, so yeah.
He is just, you'll hear it. It's like this howling...
Yeah,
whale.
Yowlish.
It's yowly. So he does this at all hours. He loves to do it at like 6 in the morning. And I don't know why. He's got fresh water. He's got food. He's got clean litter. He's cared for and loved. But no, he needs to yowl.
Yeah, needs a little attention.
Yeah.
Get Daddy to smack him.
She just did. She actually just ran into the other room and pounced on him.
Oh, good.
I'm glad that everybody knows the saga of my cat.
No. Back off. Back off, guys. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I kind of feel like they're
I think we interrupted you in the middle of explaining how service time works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it was basically explained, yeah. Like, if you hold them back for a month, that year won't end up counting as a full year, and players get 6 years before they reach free agency. So if you can play them for part of that first year, even 5 months, you'll still get 6 more full seasons after that. Plus, you can bounce them up and down with options, etc. This is how guys end up, you know, not reaching free agency until they're like 30 or 31. So
it's such a dirty move.
It really is. And I do think that's going to be one of the things that the players union probably has to attack, because it's just kind of become, you know, just kind of standard policy. And as a result... Yeah, the Tigers probably should do the same thing, but I can't advocate it because it's disreputable.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that them doing it wouldn't surprise me in the least. Do I think they should? No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with being real, like, considered about when you bring guys up. I'm generally an advocate for as soon as a guy is close to ready, you should probably move him up to the next level. I don't like seeing guys, especially once they're in the upper minors, kind of stagnate, be the big fish in the small pond, start feeling too good about themselves. You know, you got to keep challenging them to get better and better as they go. And so I like to promote aggressively. But yeah, I could see maybe the Tigers kind of, especially with some of the younger prospects, like if Matt Manning were to get there soon, you might want to do it with him. With Kristen Stewart, who's already 25, or Jake Rogers, who will be 25 next year, it doesn't matter so much because you've got that guy till they're 31 anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you might look for it with Burroughs. Isaac Paredes, if he gets there quickly, they need to do that with him, especially because he's young and up and coming fast. But otherwise, yeah, I would prefer the Tigers not do any more than that than they have to. We've got Jeffrey Todd, who posted a graphic of a Tigers fan holding a stick poking Al Avila, with Tigers fans be like, do stuff, which we all wholeheartedly agree with. Like this,
yeah,
God, something here. Corey Wolfgang wants to know if there are any chances we might see a Granderson reunion. I don't think so. The only scenario I could see maybe something like that happening is if they trade Nick and decide that they don't want to just bring up Jacob Robson and like give him a full-time job. So maybe you bring back Granderson as kind of a mentor to those guys for a season, which would be fun. But I don't think so.
I was a huge advocate for them re-signing Grandy last season.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been such a smart move for them to make, especially from a marketing perspective, you know, something to fill the seats. But I see it being less and less likely this year.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. Robert Reneker Jr. wants to know what are the chances of Hector Sanchez or Bobby Wilson going north with the team? And I'd say better than I like.
Mm-hmm. I think at least one of them will probably, well, I mean, one of them you'll have at Toledo regardless. One of them is going to play in a major league game this year.
Yeah, I think that's really likely. You know, John Hicks hasn't, It's strange with John Hicks because it almost felt like for a couple of years no one really wanted him to catch, and yet they were keeping him around anyway because they liked sort of having the third catcher. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's had hip surgery this offseason, and now they're going to kind of put him in as the backup to a guy who really isn't even like a proven prospect in Grayson Greiner. Circumstances are right for either one of those two guys, or maybe both, to get some major league time. I don't know. There's still time. I mean, obviously, maybe the Tigers will do our bidding and sign Matt Wieters or Martin Maldonado. But, I have no idea anymore. I have no idea what's going on with free agency at this point. Like, nothing is going on. So, who knows? If we're waiting out the market, we might be waiting until April 1st. So.
Oh, Lord. And it's not even out of the question that that happens. Sorry.
Yeah. I can't really make that one out. Okay, 100 losses, over or under. Ooh, go right to it.
How does an over-under work? I've never understood betting. Like, well, how does that, what is the logistics there?
Well, you basically are setting, like, a baseline where, theoretically, like, there's a 50% chance of it going one way or 50% chances of the other. I'm not sure if 100 losses is exactly the baseline, but basically that's the idea. And then you bet the over or you bet the under. In this case, I think I will bet the under. I don't think they're going to lose 100 games.
Yeah, I don't either.
I kind of think they might actually be a little better than they were last year, just because some of the guys have more experience, and we might see some of the better kind of talent starting to creep in from the minors, at least as injury replacements. So, yeah, I don't know. And the division still...
You'd see a 90-loss season very easily.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of thinking like 92,
yeah.
Something like that.
I like that this year we're picking how many games are going to lose. That's fun.
Yeah, well, we did it last year too, I'm afraid. The division is just so bad though too. It's just like, how can you lose 100 games, you know, in the AL Central, for fuck's sake?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I'll say 92 losses. Okay. Would any of the former Tigers outfielders, Austin Jackson, Cameron Mayburn, or Curtis Granderson, help out in the outfield? That's from Adam Smith. You know, familiar faces in familiar places kind of a deal. I guess it's possible if they traded Nick that maybe they would kind of bring in like a veteran guy like that to just kind of fill in, maybe give a little bit of help in center field if Jacoby Jones is really struggling. But it just doesn't feel like it.
I don't see it.
Yeah, although, you know, I do have to add, though, the way things are going, like, those guys may not get contracts. Those guys may be sitting there, you know, in late March, like, well, hey, either take this minor league deal or forget it, or retire. You know, they might be up against it to that degree. I don't even know. So, I don't know. In a circumstance like that, I guess that we can't say there's no chance, but no, don't expect that to happen. Adam Smith again. Could the Tigers go after Josh Harrison? He seems like a prime bounce back candidate.
I think they were in the mix on that rumor mill. I don't think that that's out of the question.
Yeah,
he's an interesting character.
Yeah. We like the idea. At this point, it's just more a question of, like, are the Tigers going to do anything? I don't imagine Josh Harrison would cost more than, you know, a couple million dollars, maybe a little bit more than that, or he might just choose to go somewhere he actually wants to play, but, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty useful player. I mean, he's played third base, shortstop, and second base, too, so he's versatile. I could definitely see him being useful. I'd be perfectly happy to have Josh Harrison. Get me Josh Harrison and Martin Maldonado or Matt Wieters, whatever.
Played 87 games at second base last year. I would take that.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would like Josh Harrison. Yes, please. Let's go get him.
Yeah, and
let's call Chris.
And nobody else seems to need him, right? Like, everybody's picking
up
all the cheap.
The Rays were looking at him, but the Rays are looking at everybody who's available because they're building some sort of weird, demented Frankenstein super team.
Yeah, yeah, where everyone can play everywhere else, every other position. Nobody's really great.
They're just
going to
like play musical positions all the time and like blow a whistle, and everyone's just going to rotate and really, really fuck everybody up.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty pretty special unit. You know, I had to notice, like, the, you know, Fangraphs released their Tampa Bay Rays top prospects list, and they had 54 guys that they wanted to write about. Usually most teams have, like, 12, maybe 20, maybe 25. I think the Tigers had 24 last time, and that was pretty good. The Rays had 54 guys that they couldn't stop themselves from writing about. God damn it.
It's disgusting, and I am not.
That is a hell of a farm system.
I am not sorry at all.
Yeah, you shouldn't be.
But Josh Harrison's actually projected to have a pretty good year next year, like a line of 259, 311, 392, OPS of 703. I'm not mad at that. You know, 104 hits, 10 home runs, 43 RBIs. I mean, this is projections, but I'd be satisfied with anything close to that. That'd be a really solid addition.
I like him a lot better than getting Neil Walker, even though Neil Walker, because he's a former Pirate and knows Don Kelly and probably Dave Littlefield, you know, is godson to his sister's, you know, brother's third child or some damn thing. I would prefer to have Josh Harrison over Neil Walker if those are our options, absolutely. Adam Smith again.
Oh, Adam, I hope you're listening.
Founder of modern economics, just hammering away at us.
I sincerely hope you listened through the entire thing of my cat yelling to get to this question section.
It was all worthwhile, Adam, trust me.
Better be.
Seeing as Nick Castellanos' trade value is so low, are the Tigers better off just riding out the season with him and going after the comp pick? I'm going to say yes at this point.
Yeah.
I just, you know, you see Nick Markakis, who's not as good as Nick, but is more well-rounded. And even though he's older, like, that's a dude who just said, hey, I'll take $6 million and go play for kind of a good team. AJ Pollock doesn't really seem to be involved in a whole lot of trade rumors. And there just don't seem to be, or signing rumors, and there just don't seem to be a whole lot of people looking for an outfielder to the point that they're going to give us another Jamer Candelario level type return. So,
yeah, I say keep him for now, see if there's any interest at the trade deadline for somebody real desperate, wants a rental, see if you can get something, but otherwise, just keep him.
Yeah, just keep him and hope.
Extend him!
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is like, maybe that's what they should be thinking right now, is if they've been trying to trade Nick, and they've been kind of holding out for an actual reasonable return, and they're not getting even remotely, you know, kind of hits like that. Yeah, maybe that's what you got to tell Nick. Like, you know, look, you know, people aren't even interested in, you know, trading us just a solid prospect for you. So what do you really think you're going to get, in free agency? And I'm sure what Nick is going to say is that Nick's going to, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to hit 320, crack 30 bombs, and prove all you idiots wrong that I can play right field.
And that may be the case, but I don't know that he's still going. I don't know that free agency is going to serve him any better than a really fair extension within the club.
Yeah, I mean, the market is really, really screwy. You know, I've only been writing baseball for 5 years, and the first 3 years I was nailing, you know, free agent contracts, like this team's going to sign this guy for this much over this many years. I have no idea anymore.
The last 2 years are just a mess. And like the last offseason, I wrote an article about how now is the time to extend Nick. And I still stand by that. I think the market is in such a bad condition that the Tigers can really be like, look, kid, you may want to bet on yourself, but we want you to be the face of our franchise. And here is our deal for 4 more years or whatever. And I think, honestly, that's what you want to do. Like, I like Nick a lot. I know I made so much fun of him at the beginning of last season, and I was such a Nick hater, but, like,
I mean, he has
stupid buttons. I think he needs to do them up, Grandma Ashley says. But, like, he could be the face of the franchise. And I think that he and the team really just need to acknowledge that they can do well for each other if they can come to, you know, an agreement.
Yep. But as you know, and the other problem there is that, as we pointed out before, Nick is the players union representative for the Tigers. And in that role, I don't know, it feels like there's got to be a lot of pressure on guys who are in that position to go to free agency if they can and try to max out what they can get rather than signing an extension. And he may actually end up suffering from that, because I think if the Tigers offered him like 5 years and $40 million, I'm not sure he could get that next offseason. I think he will, but I'm not 100% sure. So, I don't know. It'd be nice for the Tigers to do that. Maybe throw in some incentives for him and, you know, and tell him, like, look, you know, you're going to get another year in right field. If it's not working out and you're still grading badly, we're going to need you to move to first base. Like, that's just the way it is. And, you know, maybe he's been kind of bounced around his whole career. The Tigers have never really handled him particularly well, just because they needed him to plug holes as they were trying to keep the ship afloat and try to win. You know, he got bounced around in the minor leagues from positions, and then they just moved him back to third base and said, hey, you're a major leaguer now. So only giving him 1 year in right field probably isn't fair, but boy, it just didn't look good. So it's just really hard to imagine it's going to be a whole lot better. Although I could see Nick just breaking out and hitting more home runs this year and maybe being a little better defensively. And maybe someone will come calling at the deadline. But yeah, with that comp pick, you know, someone's got to pay a decent price. And it just doesn't feel like anybody's trying to win that isn't already kind of set in their outfield. Yeah, so... Oh, and then, Philip Day, why did we get rid of Verlander and not Miggy?
because nobody wanted to buy Miggy's contract.
Yep, exactly, because Verlander is still probably the best pitcher in baseball, or very close to it, and Miguel Cabrera is injury-riddled and owed, like, I don't know, another $230 million.
Yeah, I remember when they signed that new deal for Cabrera, I was on Facebook that day, and I'm like, it's kind of cool to know that Miguel Cabrera will be a Tiger into my 40s.
Yep.
And then I'm like, no. Yeah. Why? No.
There really should be a rule that once you get past the age of 35, you can do roids. Like, do what you gotta do.
It's kind of like
a handicapping thing. Like, well, okay, once you're past this point, if that's what you need to stay healthy and stay on the field, that's fine.
Like, anybody who questions why I'm so against any contract over 5 years has never seen the Miguel Cabrera contract. Like, there's a very good reason I do not believe in long contracts, because nobody benefits from them.
This is true, although I do have to keep pointing out to people that the long-term contract only came about because people didn't want to pay players what they were worth right then, you know?
Yeah.
Initially, it was just a way of deferring some of that money, because, you know, Manny Machado probably is worth like $50 million a year right now, and probably will be for the next 4 or 5 years, but you just don't know what you're going to get after that, so that's why he should get $10,300, but he's not getting it. It doesn't seem like anybody's paying that.
I still love what the Nationals did with Scherzer. It's like, we want you for 7 years, which is a perfectly reasonable amount of time to sign a guy that was that good at that time, and continues to just dazzle, but we'll pay you that 7 years over 14 years. So, like, it's a sensible contract. They get to have him for the best years of his career. And then, yes, they still have to carry that funding, but it's loaded out over another 7 years. I think that's a genius way to do things if you want to do it. Don't sign a guy to a 14-year contract. So, you know, be like, are you okay with the terms of us paying it, like, as a pay-as-you-go?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, and Max is a, you know, kind of a math guy. So with a guy like him, you can be more creative. I do wonder if some guys would just kind of be like, well, no, you're not going to pay me, you know, this much until then. I don't know.
I look at that as guaranteed income. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Like, it's such a, like.
And if you get sued, in the meantime, you've still got all that income coming rather than them being able to attack, you know, kind of the whole jackpot that you've amassed.
If you get injured at the end of that seventh year and you're able to finish out your contract, you're still getting paid for 7 more years.
And the team, can put a bunch of money aside, you know, and just invest it. And just kind of, you know, and kind of keep it aside until it's time to pay you out. And they're actually probably going to come out ahead because inflation should mean that what they're paying you 8 years from now is actually, you know, kind of less than what it was when they first started paying it to you. So, yeah, it kind of makes sense all around. It's a pretty savvy move. Man, I wish, the learners are kind of like Mike Ilitch, like 2.0. It'd be really nice to have them owning the team at this point. It'd be great.
I don't know why teams aren't doing that right now with Harper and Machado. I honestly don't. I don't know why the Nationals aren't doing it. They've clearly seen it work.
Yeah.
And my only thinking is that, does Boras just not want to do it again?
Yeah, that might be. But, you know, he's the guy who, he really just wants to be able to say, like, this is the biggest number ever. You know, however many years it takes or whatever bizarre, you know, Baroque intricacies the contract requires. Like, he would just like to be able to say, I got Bryce Harper $350 million, even if it's over 20 years, you know? So yeah, why wouldn't you get a little more flexible and creative that way?
I don't know. Maybe you're just not listening to us.
Yeah, I mean, come on. All right, that kind of wraps up the questions. So I think we're probably going to let it go for another week and talk to you all next time. I don't know, Ashley and I are going to be holding down the fort this week because Rob is on vacation.
So on a cruise, what a jerk.
So you should see all kinds of weird mistakes and goofy stuff Brandon posts.
No, but what you will see is we will actually write up that 1984 team post. It's on my list. And then we'll start the voting on the next one. We're a little bit behind.
Yep.
I blame a flooded office.
Yeah, that'll do it.
And my sanity. But things are kind of back to normal. So we should be up on the up and up with those, and our stat pieces are going to keep going as well.
Yeah, the stat pieces are coming. I've got to look at the rotations in Erie and Toledo, and that some of the decisions the Tigers are going to have to make, because it's going to be pretty crowded with starting pitchers in the upper minors. So that'll be coming out. And I also have something coming about kind of the Tigers' obsession with strikeouts and why they're obsessed with strikeouts when really no other team in the league seems to be worrying about them too much. So there's all those things to look forward to. And we will be back again next week with a new episode.
2 weeks in a row, Brandon. What's going on?
I know. It's a new year. Season's getting closer. We only got a couple weeks until pitchers and catchers report. This is great.
Yes.
Before we go, you should plug your YouTube channel thing again.
Yes.
Beg for funds.
Yes. I'm so bad. I keep posting it like once a day. But like, I'm like, I hate asking people for money. So if you weren't listening last week, I am launching a YouTube channel to kind of introduce new fans to baseball, to reintroduce old fans, to kind of, you know, explain the intricacies of the game, to, you know, really break things down to if you look at our stats posts that we've been having up, it'll be that, but at a much more user-friendly level, plus, you know, little bits of this and that, 2 episodes a week. But I am fundraising for it on Go Get Funding, which is at gogetfunding.com. And it's gogetfunding.com/helpmelaunchmyYouTubeBaseball channel with little dashes in between every word. It's the pinned tweet on my Twitter at 90 feet from home. And what really nice thing about this campaign is that, like, literally every dollar I get, they take some fees, but like, mostly what I mean is if I don't hit my goal, I still get the money. Like, they've already started paying me, which is weird. So I have to, like, set an account aside for it. But, like, I've already raised enough money right now to pay for my editing software, to pay for a brand new mic. Next on my list is to get new lighting. So I may not earn enough to get the camera that I want out of this, you know, goal. But the goals, what am I trying to link language here? The donations I have received so far have already gone a long way to helping me get there. So $5, $10, if you're really generous, $20. It really, really helps me out. So gogetfunding.com/helpmelaunchmyYouTubeBaseball channel. And again, the link for it is my pinned tweet on Twitter, which is at 90 feet from home. It would really mean the world to me. I'm super excited to get started on this. I'm going to do it regardless of how much the campaign earns, but it just gets me there that much faster.
And just kind of hearing like all of your sort of basic ideas for episodes and stuff, it's something that I haven't seen anywhere on the internet and certainly not on YouTube. It just seems like something that's whose time is overdue, and you would be an excellent person to do it. So it should be a super cool project. So if you can help Ashley out, please do so. And if you would like to donate to us here at Bless You Boys, you can head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/blessyouboys. And even small contributions there, especially if you can do like a recurring $3, $5 a month all year long, would be awesome. But whatever you can give us, we super appreciate it. Any support we get on that front is just really nice and really encouraging to us, especially in this time of woe as we wait for the Tigers to get their damn act together. So,
no kidding.
So thank you all very much. Ashley, you have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.